Welcome back to Womance's public access read-along of Jane Austen's classic Pride and Prejudice. I am your even chapter reader, Isabeau.
And I am Morgan. I read the odd chapters.
As luck would have it, this week we're reading chapter 48, which makes Morgan our resident expert on chapter 47.
That's right.
Morgan, would you grant us your expertise on what happened?
Elizabeth went back to Longbourn with her aunt and uncle, returned early from their vacances, and everyone is trying to be really optimistic about the Lydia situation and be like, oh, he definitely wants to marry her. He doesn't have like some plan to like ruin her and not marry her. But it's starting to seem like, why do we think that? Why do we think that? Once Lizzie gets home, she gets the full scoop from her sister Jane about what's been happening. Mary says some real weird stuff about virtue, which I think she means virginity. Mm-hmm. And her mom is extremely upset, and her uncle is going to go to London tomorrow, the next day, to try and catch up with her dad before he gets into a duel with Wickham. And that's it.
Yeah. That was great. Chapter 48. The whole party were in hopes of a letter from Mr. Bennet the next morning, but the post came in without bringing a single line from him. His family knew him to be, on all common occasions, a most negligent and dilatory correspondent. But at such a time, they had hoped for exertion. They were forced to conclude that he had no pleasing intelligence to send, but even of that they would have been glad to be certain. Mr. Gardner had waited only for the letters before he set off. When he was gone, they were certain at least of receiving constant information of what was going on, and their uncle promised at parting to prevail on Mr. Bennet to return to Longbourn as soon as he could, to the great consolation of his sister, who considered it as the only security for her husband's not getting killed in a duel. Mrs. Gardner and the children were to remain in Hertfordshire a few days longer, as the former thought her presence might be serviceable to her nieces. She shared in their attendance on Mrs. Bennet and was a grateful comfort to them in the hours of freedom. Their other aunt also visited them frequently and always, as she said, with the design of cheering and heartening them up, though as she never came without reporting some fresh instance of Wickham's extravagance or irregularity, she seldom went away without leaving them more dispirited than she found them. All Meryton seemed striving to blacken the man, who, but 3 months before, had been almost an angel of light. He was declared to be in debt to every tradesman in the place, and his intrigues, all honored with the title of seduction, had been extended into every tradesman's family. Everybody declared that he was the wickedest young man in the world, and everybody began to find out that they had always distrusted the appearance of his goodness. Elizabeth, though she did not credit above half of what was said, believed enough to make her former assurance of her sister's ruin still more certain, and even Jane, who believed still less of it, became almost hopeless, more especially as the time was now come when, if they had gone to Scotland, which she had never before entirely despaired of, they must in all probability have gained some news of them. Mr. Gardner left Longbourn on Sunday. On Tuesday, his wife received a letter from him. It told them that on his arrival, he had immediately found out his brother and persuaded him to come to Gracechurch Street, that Mr. Bennet had been to Epsom and Clapham before his arrival, but without getting any satisfactory information, and that he was now determined to inquire at all principal hotels in town, as Mr. Bennet thought it possible they might have gone to one of them on their first coming to London before they procured lodgings. Mr. Gardner himself did not expect any success from this measure. But as his brother was eager in it, he meant to assist him in pursuing it. He added that Mr. Bennet seemed wholly disinclined at present to leave London and promised to write again very soon. There was also a postscript to this effect. I have written to Colonel Forster to desire him to find out, if possible, from some of the young man's intimates in the regiment whether Wickham has any relations or connections, would be likely to know in what part of town he has now concealed himself. If there were anyone that one could apply to with a probability of gaining such a clue as that, it might be of essential consequence. At present, we have nothing to guide us. Colonel Forster will, I dare say, do everything in his power to satisfy us on this head. But on second thoughts, perhaps Lizzie could tell us what relations he has now living better than any other person. Elizabeth was at no loss to understand from whence this deference for her authority proceeded, but it was not in her power to give any information of so satisfactory a nature as the compliment deserved. She'd never heard of his having any relations except a father and mother, both of whom had been dead many years. It was possible, however, that some of his companions in the shire might be able to give more information, and though she was not very sanguine in expecting it, the application was a something to look forward to. Every day at Longbourn was now a day of anxiety, but the most anxious part of each was when the post was expected. The arrival of letters was the first grand object of every morning's impatience. For the letters, whatever of good or bad was to be told, would be communicated, and every succeeding day was expected to bring some news of importance. But before they heard again from Mr. Gardiner, a letter arrived for their father from a different quarter, from Mr. Collins, which, as Jane had received directions to open all, came for him in his absence. She accordingly read, and Elizabeth, who knew that curiosities his letters always were, looked over her shoulder and read it likewise. It was as follows. My dear sir, I feel myself called upon by our relationship and my situation in life to condole with you on the grievous affliction you are now suffering under, of which we were yesterday informed by a letter from Hertfordshire.
Oh, brother.
Be assured, my dear sir, that Mrs. Collins and myself sincerely sympathize with you and all your respectable family in your present distress, which must be of the bitterest kind, because proceeding from a cause which no time can remove. No argument shall be wanting on my part that can alleviate so severe a misfortune, or that may comfort you under a circumstance that must be of all others most afflicting to a parent's mind. The death of your daughter would have been a blessing in comparison of this.
Holy shit.
And it is the more to be lamented, because there is reason to suppose, as my dear Charlotte informs me, that this licentiousness of behavior in your daughter has proceeded from a faulty degree of indulgence. Though, at the same time, for the consolation of yourself and Mrs. Bennet, I am inclined to think that her own disposition must be naturally bad, or she could not be guilty of such an enormity at so early an age. Howsoever that may be, you are grievously to be pitied, in which opinion I am not only joined by Mrs. Collins, but likewise by Lady Catherine and her daughter, to whom I have related the affair.
That was one sentence.
They agree with me in apprehending that this false step in one daughter will be injurious to the fortunes of all the others, for who, as Lady Catherine herself condescendingly says, will connect themselves with such a family. And this consideration leads me, moreover, to reflect with augmented satisfaction on a certain event of last November, for had it been otherwise, I must have been involved in all your sorrow and disgrace. Let me advise you then, my dear sir, to console yourself as much as possible, to throw off your unworthy child from your affection forever, and leave her to reap the fruits of her own heinous offense. I am, dear sir, etc., etc.
Brutal. Absolutely brutal.
Better if she died. Also, super glad I didn't marry Lizzie.
Yeah, because this could have been my problem. For you.
BT Dubs, I told Lady Catherine, because, like, she loves gossip.
My friend Taylor texted me that she thinks Mr. Collins should be played by Daniel Radcliffe. Mm. And I think that is truly inspired.
That's really good casting. He'd be really funny.
Brilliant. Yeah. I think he would be great.
He would be great.
God, but he's so bad.
He's so awful. Just fucking odious.
Odious is right.
It would have been better if she died.
Good God. Also, like, he, like, wrote that in a letter. It really does remind us that this is of written at a different historical period. I don't think anyone would feel that empowered to say this in this day and age. And that's why I think we can all take a break from fighting for equality.
That's true. None of my cousins would feel empowered to say that because I lived in sin, it would have been better had I died.
Yeah, that's a big W. And yeah.
Yeah.
What more could we want?
Honestly. Yeah, who cares about constitutional protections to autonomy when we've got this?
We've got that. We've got enough.
Yeah. The trad wives are right.
You got a real trad wife. A real trad wife bone in your craw this morning.
I do.
Well, I feel like we need to excavate this further, but maybe not now.
Not now. Mr. Gardner did not write again till he had received an answer from Colonel Forrester, and then he had nothing of a pleasant nature to send. It was not known what Wickham had a single relation with whom he kept up any connection, and it was certain that he had no near one living. His former acquaintance had been numerous, but since he had been in the militia, it did not appear that he was on terms of particular friendship with any of them. There was no one, therefore, who could be pointed out as likely to give any news of him. And in the wretched state of his own finances, there was a powerful motive for secrecy in addition to his fear of discovery by Lydia's relations, for it had just transpired that he had left gaming debts behind him to a very considerable amount. Colonel Forrester believed that more than £1,000 would be necessary to clear his expenses at Brighton. He owed a good deal in the town, but his debts of honor were still more formidable. Mr. Gardner did not attempt to conceal these particulars from the Longbourn family. Jane heard them with horror. "A gamester," she cried. "This is wholly unexpected. I had not an idea of it."
Wholly unexpected, okay.
Right. Mr. Gardner added in his letter that they might expect to see their father at home the following day, which was Saturday. Rendered spiritless by the ill success of their endeavors, he had yielded to his brother-in-law's entreaty that he would return to his family and leave it to them to do whatever occasion might suggest to be advisable for continuing their pursuit. When Mrs. Bennet was told of this, she did not express so much satisfaction as her children expected, considering what her anxiety for his life had been before. "What? Is he coming home? And without poor Lydia?" she cried. "Sure he will not leave London before he has found them. Who is to fight Wickham and make him marry her if he comes away?" As Mrs. Gardner began to wish to be at home, it was settled that she and her children should go to London at the same time that Mr. Bennet came from it. The coach, therefore, took them the first stage of their journey and brought its master back to Longbourn. Mrs. Gardner went away in all the perplexity about Elizabeth and her Derbyshire friend that had attended her from the part of the world. His name had never been voluntarily mentioned before them by her niece, and the kind of half-expectation which Mrs. Gardner had formed of their being followed by a letter from him had ended in nothing. Elizabeth had received none since her return that could come from Pemberley.
Real quick, because I know people are going to be pondering this, because I was pondering this. £1,000 in 1813 is the equivalent to approximately £10,000 today. So he was in £10,000 of debt.
Which is essentially $20,000.
And that was just his gambling debt.
Oh, that's not even all his other debt. That's a lot of money.
I think he was having a lot of fun. That's what that says to me.
I hope he was having fun. The present unhappy state of the family rendered any other excuse for the lowness of her spirits unnecessary. Nothing, therefore, could be fairly conjectured from that, though Elizabeth was by this time tolerably well acquainted with her own feelings, was perfectly aware that, had she known nothing of Darcy, she could have borne the dread of Lydia's infamy somewhat better. It would have spared her, she thought, one sleepless night out of two. When Mr. Bennet arrived, he had all the appearance of his usual philosophic composure. He said as little as he had ever been in the habit of saying, made no mention of the business that had taken him away, and it was some time before his daughters had courage to speak it. It was not till the afternoon when he joined them at tea that Elizabeth ventured to introduce the subject, and then, on her briefly expressing her sorrow for what he must have endured, he replied, "Say nothing of that. Who should suffer but myself? It has been my own doing, and I ought to feel it." "You must not be too severe upon yourself," replied Elizabeth.
You should be more severe.
Yeah, I think more.
I think he should be a little bit more severe, if I'm being honest.
"You may well warn me against such an evil. Human nature is so prone to fall into it. No, Lizzie, let me once in my life feel how much I have been to blame." I am not afraid of being overpowered by the impression. It will pass away soon enough. Do you suppose them to be in London? Yes. Where else can they be so well concealed? And Lydia used to want to go to London, added Kitty. She is happy then, said her father dryly, for her residence there will probably be of some duration. Then, after a short silence, he continued, Lizzie, I bear you no ill will for being justified in your advice to me last May, which, considered the event, shows some greatness of mind. They were interrupted by Miss Bennet, who came to fetch her mother's tea. This is a parade, he cried, which does one good. It gives such an elegance to misfortune. Another day I will do the same. I will sit in my library in my nightcap and powdering gown and give as much trouble as I can. Or perhaps I may defer. I defer it till Kitty runs away. I'm not going to run away, Papa, said Kitty fretfully. If I should ever go to Brighton, I would behave better than Lydia. You go to Brighton. I would not trust you so near it as Eastbourne for £50. No, Kitty, I have at last learnt to be cautious, and you will feel the effects of it. No officer is ever to enter my home again, nor even to pass through the village. Balls will be absolutely prohibited unless you stand up with one of your sisters, and you are never to stir out of doors till you can prove that you have spent 10 minutes of every day in a rational manner. Kitty, who took all these threats in a serious light, began to cry. Well, well, said he, do not make yourself unhappy. If you are a good girl for the next 10 years, I will take you to review at the end of them.
Still cracking jokes at his daughter's expense.
You can't go to any of the balls unless you stand up with one of your sisters.
Yeah, which is such a dad move.
Totally.
But, like, really inappropriate.
Just, like, read the room, Mr. Bennet.
I'm glad you're still, like, LOL cats about all of this, I guess. This is so dumb. What a jerk. He's like, let me take responsibility for once in my life. And by the way, Lizzie, I'm not holding it against you that you were right.
In case you were wondering.
I should hope not. Don't strain yourself trying to push out that compliment, Mr. Bennet. Good God, what an ass.
Truly.
Secretly, Mr. Bennet has landed himself as, like, the worst father we've ever read in our 5 years of romance novel podcasting. We have read over 150 different books. I would assume a reasonable estimate of those 80 had a terrible father key point.
Yeah.
At least conservatively. Mr. Bennet is top dog, top bad daddy dog.
He's selfish. He's uninterrogative. He's plain mean at times.
He delights himself at the expense of others.
Yeah, including his wife and kids.
Only his wife and kids.
Because he's not terribly social, even though his wife and kids are. And he doesn't, like, make enough space for that. Doesn't make those compromises.
I think he almost deserved that letter from Mr. Collins.
Yeah, I think he did. If it hadn't been so fucked up about Lydia. Because he is a bad dad. And, like, his, like, insane favoritism of Jane and Lizzie is so clear in the way that he treats Mary and Kitty and Lydia. Like, the text of him is so wild because, like, Donald Sutherland's portrayal in the 2003 version is so
hot
and also, like, good dad. Like, he's, like, bumbling
humor
and whatever, humorous, but also, like, when he tries to protect Mary from her bad piano recital and gives her that big hug where she just, like, I really wanted it, daddy, and she's like, I know. Like, there's fucking none of that in the text. That's all Donald Sutherland's interpretation.
Yeah. And, like, I don't think any adaptation really shows what a complete dick he is.
No, they always treat his humor as, like, a high watermark of both intelligence, but also, like, good daddom, because he, like, gives Lizzie a longer chain or appreciates the fact that she's a spitfire when, like, the rest of society, i.e. Catherine de Bourgh, is, like, trying to put a little snuffer on that. They're like, at least you didn't do that.
Yeah, the only person who doesn't like her in the book is Catherine de Bourgh. And, like, awful Caroline, who really only dislikes her because they're rivals. And, like, in fact, he's, like, he doesn't stand alone. He is so rough. And, like, I think people really have a hard time seeing neglect as an active form of
abuse.
I mean, yeah. Of at least cruelty. Neglect is an active choice, you know? I think it's an active choice at the very least to ignore something or to understand it as beneath you. And probably when this text was published, of course he understood his silly flibbertigibbet daughters as beneath him. But I am also, I'm baffled by the way he gets treated in the popular imagination. Because the text holds him accountable. Lizzie has that whole moment where she's like, I'm going to tell him not to let Lydia go to Brighton. And he's like, nah, whatever. And she's like, oh my God, Mr. Darcy is right. You've always been like this.
Yeah. And she has that like insane moment where she's reflecting on her parents' marriage and the fact that like, it's not conjugal bliss and like that they don't seem to like each other and that he... Like the worst of his offenses is that he's like rude to his wife in public. And that's like the first time that Lizzie's like wrestled with that.
And she, I think she also has that moment where she's like, oh yeah, he like just married my mom because she was pretty. Like he talks about like silliness and irrationality, but that was his determining factor. Maybe that's why he's such a dick about it. Cause he's like, but he allows his children to ruin their lives in kind. Oh, I'm just so mad at him.
He's a bad dad.
At first I was like, oh, listen to him taking responsibility. And then he's like, I'm not going to hold it against you that you were right. And then he immediately just like makes poor Kitty feel like worse just for the giggles.
Yeah.
He was never going to duel Wickham.
No, he absolutely wasn't.
It would have been cool of him. Cooler of him.
Cooler. And it also would have showed a kind of interest in Lydia that he has not shown up into this point. Honestly, this is all just Donald Sutherland's propaganda and the BBC version, because like he's not as charming as Donald Sutherland, but also I didn't have as negative feelings about him.
No, they were just like cartoon characters, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
And Donald Sutherland, certainly, I mean, he just has such grace and presence and natural warmth.
It's so true. It's so upsetting, Allie. And like natural warmth is so right. Like even in the moments when he's delivering set downs, he's like, he's doing it in such a way as like, well, that's a dad set down rather than like a cruel one.
I wonder what kind of father he really was, because his son is Kiefer Sutherland, who doesn't seem to be doing, I mean, seems to be doing well now, but for a long time was not okay.
Yeah, I think.
And we should hold all dads accountable for.
I think he plays a good dad and maybe wasn't as good or like hands on a dad. I also like, I'm confused a lot by Kiefer Sutherland's more modern choices. Like, I'm glad that like he's not coked out anymore, among other things.
Happy for you, Kiefer.
Happy for you, Kiefer. But like, he's also made some like wild choices in terms of like 24. And then
that was
like,
a good choice.
Designated Survivor. I mean, they're like all really coded as like conservative is the point I'm getting at. It's like Donald Sutherland doesn't strike me as particularly conservative. Kiefer Sutherland's cinematic choices have been.
Donald Sutherland is quite the leftist, quite the comrade.
That's what I thought.
Actually got Jane Fonda turned on. And we know how far she took it.
Still does. Lady just got arrested a few months ago.
She's still doing it, man. It's interesting that you say that because I was thinking Kiefer Sutherland absolutely has conservative face. You know who else has conservative face? Glenn Powell.
Yeah. That guy is just like young Republican president is what he is. You know what I mean? Like that, like when I said he has a fraternity face, the fraternity is definitely also like my dad's a former Republican congressman from Colorado. And it's like, okay, guy.
Yeah. And that's who you think is cute. And that's who you think is cute.
I also think other people are cute. I'm just saying he has an incredibly...
I only think Che Guevara is cute. That's the only person I think is cute.
That's such a lie.
The only person I think is cute is Che Guevara. So I don't have this problem of finding righty tighties cute.
I know nothing of either of these people's politics, but like based on their choices and their projects that they produce.
It's irrelevant because you're right. They have conservative face.
Yeah.
Bill Paxton.
Yeah. Oof. And like every version of conservative, like aged Republican dad conservative, even when he was younger, like weird conspiracy theorist conservative.
And it's not just that they're white guys, because like Donald Sutherland, father of Kiefer Sutherland,
does not have right
does
face.
Does not have a donkey face, maybe is what we call it. Mm-mm. He has elephant.
Yeah.
Well,
he's got lefty face.
He's got lefty face. Yeah. He's more left faced. Do you know who's kind of hard to place, though?
Michael Sheen.
Michael Sheen is a good example. He's hard to place.
He's an incredible chameleon, also incredible lefty face.
And maybe, and I'm open to disagreements with this, but I feel like Jeff Bridges, lefty face.
Mm, absolutely lefty face. And multi iterations of lefty face.
Here's who's hard to place for me.
Who would say Ben Affleck?
Kurt Russell.
Mm. He could go either way. He is true center face. Right face.
Right face.
Wyatt.
Wyatt, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely right faced.
Used to try to be a professional hockey player. So who knows which way his face leaned before he played too much hockey. And how much hockey is too much before your face gets changed? 5 months?
A season?
I have no clue. But
It's not that long.
They all seem to come out of it battered pretty quickly.
Especially for wearing helmets and face guards, their faces get fucked up.
What were we talking about? Oh, Pride and Prejudice.
Bad dads.
Anyway, send us in your white guys. We will make the final determination if they have left face or right face.
Or center face.
Or center face, right. Especially, like, even send us screenshots of, like, Tinder. We'll let you know.
We will let you know.
The thing is like, it doesn't actually determine their politics.
Mm-mm.
But it does determine how I talk around them. When
certainly for the first couple of meetings.
Sure, for the first couple of meetings.
Yeah, this is definitely a verify situation. Yeah.
These are dudes who I will 100% be like, what's so like, what's his deal?
How does he feel about the Dobbs decision?
Where was he on January 6th, do you think? If you had to guess.
And if you don't know, maybe ask.
Maybe ask. Here's the thing. I don't think Mr. Bennett would have been a part of the insurrection. But you can still be a jerk, even if you weren't committing treason.
Absolutely. That's nonpartisan.
Sometimes people who commit treason are pretty cool. I'll be sure to edit out me saying that.
I mean, it just depends on the treason.
Yeah,
right?
That's right. I was, of course, thinking of John Brown when I said that.
It's so funny that you were thinking that.
He's the other guy I think is cute. It's just Che Guevara and John Brown posters all over my ceiling.
The real John Brown or Ethan Hawke as John Brown?
The real John Brown. The real John Brown.
Okay.
Ethan Hawke.
Because Ethan Hawke also has left face and is lefty, but is a total shithead.
Do you know what? I think he's actually an interesting example of a right face that has donned accoutrement to make himself look like he has left face.
Interesting.
Yeah. He thinks about, man, his Gen Z flirtation slouch to Rihanna. That was embarrassing. Not Gen Z. Generation. Sorry. Gen X flirtation Gen X. Slouch. Embarrassing.
Yeah. He's embarrassing.
What if Rihanna had sex with him?
Maybe she did.
I don't think she did, Isabel.
I don't think she did either.
I don't think she did. What were we talking about? Oh,
Pride
yeah.
Pride and Prejudice. Loosen your preds.
Whatever your prejudices.